2 months ago, President Obama and President-elect Trump met face-to-face for the first time. They came out of the meeting saying all went well and talking of a smooth transition of power. So far, you might not call things smooth, but this is hardly the most fraught transition we've seen between U.S. presidents. For that lesson from history, we turn to Ed Ayers and Brian Ballow. They co-host the weekly public radio show and podcast Backstory. Here and Now's Peter O'Dowd spoke with them both, and he started by asking Brian what happened in 1933 when Franklin Roosevelt took the keys from Herbert Hoover.
Well, what happened then is they hated each other, basically, and they didn't pretend very much not to hate each other. The perhaps low point in the transition came when they were forced to sit in an open-air car on the way to the inauguration, and they sat there in stony silence.
And remind us why. We were in the midst of a financial crisis in this country.
We were in a terrible financial crisis, and the two men had very different ideological positions on how to deal with it. The real breaking point between the two of them was direct assistance from the national government to individuals. Roosevelt had already done that in the state of New York, and he felt it was the federal government's obligation to reach out and help people, the millions of Americans that were unemployed. Hoover felt that this would lead to dependency, government overreach, too much bureaucracy, and eventually either fascism or some form of socialism.
Well, not unlike Trump, FDR at the time offered a very different vision than Hoover did about the best way forward for the country, as you kind of laid out there. Here was Roosevelt in his inaugural address in 1933.
This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and will prosper.
So you hear that from 1933. It could be read as taking a dig at Hoover, I guess, in a way. But we should also remember that this is a time when inaugurations happened in March. So these two presidents, these two guys, had a lot of time to meet with each other. In fact, they met three times. Did FDR ever take any advice from Hoover?
No. He was relatively polite in those meetings with Hoover. But the fact of the matter is the two men had fundamental differences on what government should do. But just as importantly, you referred to the dig. The dig really was Hoover's whole approach to the crash and then the stock market crash and then the ensuing depression was denial. It's going to get better. You know, we're in a bad cycle here. And that dig you referred to in that great clip you played is Roosevelt saying, look, we can't deny this anymore. We need to acknowledge this and then take bold action to deal with it. And Roosevelt did.
That, in fact, Hoover was not telling the truth in the eyes of FDR. Kind of that hurts a little bit. Ed, why don't you take us further back? Because there have been transitions in this country when we were at the brink of war. I'm thinking 1861, Abraham Lincoln takes over for James Buchanan.
Yeah, I mean, you know, direct assistance to citizens in need is big stuff, but it's not fight over the future of slavery and over the future of the nation. I mean, if you want to see the most fraught transition in American history, it's just the one that you said, Peter, between Buchanan and Lincoln.
Talk about setting up your successor for failure. In Buchanan's final address to Congress, he said Southern states had no legal right to secede from the Union. And he also said, on the other hand, the federal government doesn't really have much it can do to stop that from happening. What do you think was going on there? Was he trying to create disorder for Lincoln, or was he just done with the job?
Well, he'd been creating disorder throughout his entire presidency. You know, he's the second oldest man ever elected to the presidency. He had announced in his inaugural address that he was only going to serve one term. His entire purpose was to put the nation back together again. But he was so pro-Southern. He was basically incapable of imagining the South buckling under to the greater purpose. And so he was not willing to do anything. So here's the thing. Things were bad in the Great Depression. But imagine that six states had seceded from the country by the time that you showed up for your inaugural address, and eight others are considering it. That's the situation that Lincoln faced.
Yeah. Let's go back even further than this now, because there were times when presidents have tried to sabotage, maybe that's a strong word, but at least undermine the goals of the incoming president. There was the story of the Midnight Judges with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, right?
Yeah, you know, back in the very beginning of the nation when it wasn't clear what the norms everybody talks about today really were. And so John Adams, disgusted with the threat that he believed that Jefferson and his party presented to the United States, decided that he would fill the judiciary with judges across the country who would basically perpetuate the Federalist policies that Adams had stood for and be a bulwark against whatever democratic mischief that Thomas Jefferson had in mind.
Hmm. All right, well, let's shift to something else, and that is the relationship between President-elect Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. We've heard so much about this. Trump has called for closer ties between the two countries, much to the chagrin to many people in his own party, even. He was skeptical of the Obama administration's claim that Russia was behind the election hacks on the DNC. Putin has been complimentary of Trump, he even sent the president-elect a Christmas card. But Brian, this is not the first time an American leader has had a controversially cozy relationship with Russia.
No, there have been bromances before and bromances during really difficult times. And we go back to Franklin Roosevelt really arguing that for geopolitical reasons, in order to balance the growing power of Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, the United States needed to have good relations with the Soviet Union. And Roosevelt was a supremely confident kind of guy. Hmm. He felt that he himself could charm this brutal dictator, Stalin.
He even called him Uncle Joe. but FDR got a lot of criticism for that because people said that Stalin was the one who, in fact, had the upper hand in that relationship. And how do historians judge FDR's role in helping to prop up what would actually set the stage years down the road for major conflicts between the West and Russia?
Well, I think if you skip right to the Cold War in the early 1950s, late 1940s that you're referring to, you can see it perhaps as the Soviet Union getting the upper hand, giving away Eastern Europe, as it was said, after World War II. To do that would be to forget the colossal sacrifices that the Soviet Union made during World War II. Millions and millions of soldiers, millions and millions of Russian civilians that were killed at the hands of the Nazis. And it doesn't take a huge imagination to understand that if those weren't Soviet lives, some of them might have been American lives.
Well, Ed, let's go back just a little bit deeper than that again. What other uncomfortable relationships can you recall between presidents and other controversial countries?
Well, the greatest bromance of all would have to be with the Marquis de Lafayette, apparently a very lovable guy. Everybody thought highly of him. He'd helped win the American Revolution. And even though he was exiled in his own native France, we brought him to the United States and marched him all over the country. And as a reward, because he was broke, we gave him $200,000 in a part of Florida. So,
and named a lot of squares after him, as far as I can recall.
So there's a case, you know, where the conflict—now, this is hard for us to imagine today when we think about Russia or China being the great powers, but, of course, then it was England and France. Mm-hmm. And if Thomas Jefferson was a huge fan of Lafayette, whom he hosted in his home and in between drinking French wines and eating French foods and all that, well, the alternative then must have been John Adams, to pick on him again, must have been an Anglophile. Now, he wasn't really, he didn't really like anybody, but he liked the English better than he did the French. And so, as funny as that seems to us now, at the time, it was of enormous global consequence. Was the United States more like France in the wake of its revolution, or is it more like England, the great power of the world that we had fought a revolution?
What is our future going to look like?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have to exercise historical imagination to put ourselves back in a position which something that seems like, well, which part of Europe do you want to visit on your easiest trip now?
Peter, I think one of the things we learn from these close relationships, they're always seen as, you know, matters of personalities, hitting it off. I looked into his eyes and I saw this and that. They're usually very important diplomatic objectives. At least in the minds of the presidents who are pursuing it. For Roosevelt, it was balancing world power, basically, whatever kind of guy Stalin was. I mean, to go to Donald Trump, my guess is if we brought him into this conversation, he'd say, look, Putin can be a very useful ally in fighting Islamic terrorism. Now, you might agree with that or disagree with it, but I think it's important to look underneath the personalities and at least credit the possibility that these presidents might have larger diplomatic objectives in mind.
Brian Ballow and Ed Ayers co-host the weekly public radio show and podcast Backstory,